I'd like to call the Conference Committee on Transportation Finance to order. And we just bought a little time because we're waiting. We will start on time, but Senator Murphy needed a little emergency, so he'll be here in about 5 minutes. He actually cut his hand. He's getting stitches, so he'll be with us. So what we're talking about today pretty much is because we're getting just an orientation or to know each other, know what we expect from the committee, what we're going to do, and go through some of the rules and some of the procedures. At this point, until I talk to Senator Murphy, we probably won't go into side-by-side or any of them. That's all in your packets, I believe. So probably Senator Murphy will be here. He assumed in a few minutes ago in less than 10 minutes, so we expect that he'd be here. We could probably just go through the formalities and explain what you presume your function on this committee is, and I'd maybe just like to comment, it is the function of the committee to pass a transportation bill, and it's our hope that we'll have something that there is, no, it isn't Senator Murphy. We anticipate that we'll send a bill to the governor that was acceptable both to the House and Senate, and that perhaps he would sign, and that we wouldn't have to go through the routine any more often. I think we have an obligation, both as a legislature and Senate and House members, that we have to put a bill together, regardless of what we hear from the outside. And I think it's our obligation to send a bill out that we assume that is needed and that would pass. And I think that's our intent. And if I could, I'll introduce myself. I'm Representative Bernie Leader, and I represent some area in northwestern Minnesota, 4 counties, and I'm kind of far from here. But anyhow, my intent, again, as I pointed out, is that we're going to pass the transportation bill. When we talk transportation, we recognize it's not strictly highways or it's not strictly transit, or it's not even that. We need airports, we need port, we need railroads. So we're really looking at the total transportation picture. But I do know that the biggest emphasis is usually on highways and transit. So it's our intent that we will pass a bill that has all those items in it. I think it would be my intent never to pass a bill that had strictly highways or strictly added transit, because it's going to be tough the way it is. One of the difficulties we have, as you all are aware, that we haven't had a major funding bill really in highways or transit for at least 20 years, so I think it behooves us to do something, and I think we recognize that we've never seen the public support, at least in my opinion, that we have right now. So just to start out, if we could start out, and if you'd introduce yourself and say what you expect you're going to do, and maybe we can put it together in a committee. Senator Sieben, I will start way to the left.
Thank you, Chairman Leader. I'm Katie Sieben. I'm from District 57, and that includes Cottage Grove and Hastings. Happy to be here, and I'm looking forward, like you said, Chair Leader, to helping put together a very balanced bill that serves the needs of the entire state.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Leader. I'm Terry Bonoff, and I represent District 43, which is the northern part of Minnetonka, most of Plymouth and Medicine Lake. And I, too, am here so that we put together a transportation bill that actually does pass. And I think that it is the one thing that we can do this session to move Minnesota forward in a very positive way, and I'm committed to that.
Thank you.
Chairman Leader. It's nice to be back on the Transportation Committee with you. I enjoyed our service together in the House.
Good room.
I'm sorry?
A good meeting room.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Like my colleagues, I hope to pass a bill that's very ambitious in its goals, and that is, strikes the balance that we need to strike between roads and transit. That starts to break down the distinction that we're talking about transportation, and we're not talking about one or the other. We're talking about an entire system that works coherently and comprehensively, and really establishes, for the first time ever in history in this state, a dedicated, reliable source of funding for transit, as all of our peer regions do.
Thank you.
Senator. Thank you, Chair Leader. My name is Jim Carlson, and I'm the Senator for District 38, which is Burnsville and Eagan, which is in Dakota County. And my intent here is to hopefully work on something that is just the best we can do, and it will represent the best interests of everyone that is has sent us here to have some vision and to pass a bill that has the best interests of the future of Minnesota, the people that sent us here, our businesses, and the residents who have to pay the taxes. So I'm hoping that we can get something done here that is so good that it will just be a matter of sliding right on through.
Thank you, Senator. And we'll just skip the staff because they aren't going to tell us what they want to pass. So we'll just come back to you. And Representative Morrow, would you start?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Terry Morrow, represent Nicollet County and part of Sibley County. Live down in St. Peter, and I appreciate everything that's been said so far about balancing greater Minnesota and other area needs in terms of transit and transportation.
Frank.
Thank you, Chair Leader. I'm Frank Hornstein from District 60B. Senator Dibble is my senator in southwest Minneapolis. And I was pleased that when Senator Dibble and I convened joint hearings of the House and Senate Transportation and Transit Committees that we had such a great response all over the region and in St. Cloud. And I think that I'm carrying with me those thoughts as we move forward for a good balanced bill and certainly a bill that addresses our huge unmet transit needs.
Thank you. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Melissa Hortman, and I represent Northern Brooklyn Park and Southern Coon Rapids. I have a little part of Hennepin and a little part of Anoka. And I'm really confident that this committee will produce a bill that is balanced and takes care of transit needs all over the state and road needs all over the state. And I think leadership requires that we be visionary and that we be courageous, but that we also be very pragmatic and that we put together a bill that will become law.
Thank you.
I'm Representative Ron Earhart from 41A, and which is most of the city of Edina, and I didn't know I was going to be called on to make a speech, Chair Leader, so I'm just here to get some fresh money for transportation.
And we have, in the House, we have a change this year. We have Representative Peterson is going to be, just in case one of us gets sick or be replaced, he's going to monitor it, just like in a jury. If you'd comment, Representative Peterson, we're glad to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also-ran. I've been in local government for quite a long time, and so I'm a local governance guy from the city of Bloomington and the Met Council. And I realized that when I moved up here with my high school sweetheart, we had two cars in our house. Well, my family now has 15 cars that are on the road all the way from Watertown to Bloomington to Bryn Mawr, and we need to deal with transportation because although I've put 13 more cars in the road, we haven't spent that much more money. So I think part of that's going to be part of my legacy to see if I can't do something to help that. So thank you.
Thank you. And the timing is just great. We're the last member to introduce yourself, Senator.
Steve Murphy. Sorry I was late, but I was defending the Senate's position, and then I got sent to the hospital. So.
So we were just talking what your function, what you think is going to happen here, basically. Everybody said we're going to pass the bill, the governor signed it.
That sounds good to me. Okay. That's what we're all working for, right?
That's correct. We didn't get the introductions from the staff. The Senate staff, would one start? Yeah.
My name is Kelly Russell. I'm Senator Steve Murphy's legislative assistant.
I'm Krista Boyd. I'm Senate fiscal analyst.
Bonnie Berzowski, Senate counsel.
Steve Ball, Senate committee administrator for the Transportation Committee.
Even the mic moves.
I know. I'm Abby Mann. I'm the committee administrator for the Transportation Committee in the House.
Matt Burris with House Research.
Susie Maher. I'm the committee legislative assistant for the House Transportation Committee and representative leader.
We have our fiscal analyst in the House where we have people that represents two or functions with two committees, and our fiscal analyst, Corinne Zuers, is also the fiscal analyst for the Capital Investment Committee, and depends on which meeting is going where or what, so probably have to divide our time. We're going to rely on Kelly and Krista, I understand, for Finance, is that correct? Or Bonnie, I don't know. Somebody in there. Anyhow, that's where we're at. I'd also like to just talk a little bit about procedure when we're here, because we do have some new members that perhaps haven't gone through or been and served on the conference committee. We're subject to a couple rules, and I'll just, if I may read these, Senator Murphy, is that okay? One of them is the temporary joint rules of the House and Senate, and dealing with conference committees, well, that's kind of long, and I'm not going to read all of that, but I'm just going to read a portion of it. It says, all conference committees shall be open to the public as much as practical. Meetings of the conference committee shall be announced as far in advance as possible, and actions taken shall be agreed upon in an open meeting. At an agreed-upon hour, the conference committee shall meet. The members from each house shall state to the members from the other house orally or in writing the reasons for their respective positions. The members shall confer thereon. A conference committee may not meet between the hours of midnight and 7 a.m., except that a committee may extend a meeting for up to 1 hour past midnight by a vote of two-thirds of the members appointed to the committee by each house. The conferees shall report to their respective houses the agreement they have reached, or if none, the fact of a disagreement. And there's quite a bit more as far as what happens as far as the end of session, and that's in your joint rules, but I thought I'd just read that. The one thing that we should remember for the new members, it takes a majority of members of both houses. We have five voting members in each side, so to pass any of the items or the bill, it's three members from the House and three members from the Senate. It can't be two members from one and what do we have, eight members from the other. Well, no. Four members from the other. It has to be three and three, otherwise it's voted down. That's kind of an important thing to do. The other, we will be assigned permanently this room, and between the chairs, they determine the time, and we presume we'll let the staff would notify you the committee time or when it would be. We probably generally can meet in the afternoon. I know what the Senate's schedule are. You have a session in the afternoon, Senator Murphy?
I think that they're making the afternoons available for
conference. Right. It seems like the leadership has discussed it, and apparently other than Thursday when the House has a long session, we probably will be meeting in the afternoon as much as practical. The one other thing is I haven't spoken with Senator Murphy because, frankly, this was called not by Senator Murphy or myself. I believe leadership said we had to have a meeting today. So that's why we're getting some of the things out. And again, I haven't discussed with Senator Murphy if we should go through the side-by-side or not today, if we want to take that time, because that's not going to go that quickly. The other thing is the reason I have the gavel today is because it's a House file. The gavel will be passed on it really every day, except Senator Murphy really and I haven't discussed it. My understanding is in the past we've done it, say for some reason we had a meeting in the afternoon, we had a recess, that committee chair would have control of the gavel all day.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons, I believe there's some recommendation, or maybe it hasn't, but they said the gavel should pass every day, and I think that's something we quite don't agree on. It's okay, it should pass at every subsequent meeting in a new day, rather than, I think, where we got caught up before Senator Murphy. Sometimes one of the committee chairs sat on the gavel for 3 days.
We aren't going to do that.
So the committee heard that, and I think that's not our intent, because that does cause a problem if you have a really an ordinary committee chair, like senators usually wear it, or not. But sometimes it really disrupts the committee function, so I believe it would be correct to say that if we had a meeting like now and we ran and we took a recess for dinner this evening, the same chair would conduct at least through the same day. Is that correct,
yep.
Senator Murphy?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, basically some of the housekeeping. Now I'd like to read one of the other rules, which is recommended for us to read. And I think so often we don't read our own rules. But in the permanent rules of the House, which we passed this year, basically it says a conference committee may report at any time and may meet during a daily session of the House without leave. A conference committee report must include only subject matter contained in the House or Senate versions of the bill for which that conference committee was appointed, or like subject matter contained in a bill passed by the House or Senate. The member presenting the conference committee report to the House must disclose all substantive changes from the House version of the bill. And I presume that's the same in the Senate, Senator Murphy. In other words, this is not going to be a Christmas tree bill. Anything that's in here generally has to pass one of the two bodies. So, Senator Murphy, what do you want to say about it?
Oh, no, you're doing a great job.
I think I covered everything. You know?
I think you did, too.
Do any of the members have any questions? For the new members? The pay is the same, by the way. It's not And in the House, no guns allowed in the House chambers. I know about the Senate. So if you're packing anything.
Do we have a, Mr. Chair, do we have a pizza budget at least if we go late?
Yeah. I too, I'm glad you pointed out something, Senator Dibble. We recognize, you know, so many of us think we had a target. We did have a target in each our respective bodies, but now because we're putting the two finance bills together, which is a little bit different as far as money, you know, I think the Senate has some cash, which the House didn't have, so we will get new targets. So we really won't be able to put this bill totally together till we get the new targets. I think that's correct, Senator. I don't believe that, Senator Murphy, do you want to start in the side by side or not? It's what we've done. The staff has compared the two Senate and the House bills, or not the two, the Senate and the House bills, and we asked if they would just show the portions that are different. And Bonnie, if I may, or is that Billy? Bonnie, if I may ask, I think basically there weren't too many, or Matt either, mm-hmm. there weren't too many items that were different, were there? There were a lot of them, but I mean, we wouldn't need to go through the ones that were the same, or is it the committee feel that we should go through the items that are the same, because we do have new members. It does take quite a bit longer if we go through the items that are the same in both bills.
Mr. Chairman, if I can make a recommendation, I think that we should probably have Ms. Berzovsky kind of lay out the portions that are substantially different, and or items that you know, the House might have and the Senate might not, or vice versa. So substantially different provisions, or provisions that are missing in one bill or the other. And the ones that are similar or very close to being alike, we can work those out without drawing a lot of light on them.
I think that would expedite things. I think we can perhaps start doing that. But one thing I didn't point out is the fact that we are subject to open meeting laws, but that does not restrict us for, as our conferees, our own side to go and meet. But it would mean if the House conferees were going, we couldn't have more than one senator come with us, or couldn't do it, vice versa, we couldn't do that. So technically, we're subject to, we just can't, you know, we actually can't meet as a group, or even in lunch, or anywhere else where there'd be more than whatever is less than a quorum. I did fail to point out, we do have a quorum, we have a full committee, so. But those are some items that you may want to respect. And another thing I think that we should respect, you know, a lot of these things are not finalized till we get the bill out. And I'm sure that as soon as you walk out of here, you're going to have individuals or the media asking what's going on or what. So be certain if you do get into that situation, where normally you're their friend now. I mean, the media like to talk to you. Be careful that you don't preclude something that's going to happen or not happen. I think it's you should be aware of that. If it's okay, Senator Murphy, we will start to look at the side-by-side. Okay. The other thing, I think Senator Murphy and I, we didn't discuss either. I think we could pretty much keep our committees to a certain length, at least a couple hours or thereabout. And normally, I don't know how you feel, but if we can meet in the afternoon, we could probably have a set time or something. Mm-hmm. But we'll discuss that as we go along and see what kind of problems we run into. Matt or Bonnie, do you would...
Well, Mr. Chairman, why don't we have Matt start off? And
if you would, Matt. Basically, one take both or just the House side?
Well, let's just
take them.
Yeah, we can.
Got them both.
I think Matt knows it well enough. I think he can probably go through and just point out the provisions, like I said, that are substantially different. Or, you know, like here on the very first page, on page one at the bottom, there's no comparable provision in the House. And
That's right. We could do that. And I think, too, the committee members should recognize that Mr. Burris and Bonnie, I always have a tough time getting the Wierzowski.
Wierzowski.
I have been meeting and compile these and put them together, and they've done a good job so we could expedite things. So between both of them, they can. We'll cover this, at least in the first meeting, much of it. Matt, if you'd want to start, I'd appreciate that.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, members.
And it's the beginning of your file. If you open your book, everyone have it? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll start off pretty high level. We can certainly jump into more detail, but it sounds like the committee would like to move fairly quickly through this. The differences in the first several pages relate to appropriations, and in general, the amounts are different, and there are a number of different riders, but the general appropriations overall structure is the same. Starting on page R1, that's the general summary of appropriations. Actually, jump forward into the transportation appropriations on page R3. Sorry, let's actually skip forward from there to page.
Mr. Burris, you aren't commenting on the ones.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm working off the full text, Mr. Chair. I can work off this summary instead.
You want to work off full text? That's right.
We're
looking at the summary, most of my things.
Yeah.
I think that'd be easier in a way. Matt.
Yeah, I actually might defer to Ms. Wierzowski if you want to work off the summary, if that's okay, because I haven't had a chance to review in this form very much.
Would you want to do that, Ms. Wierzowski?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Well, she's starting. I just happened to think of one thing that, and I forgot my train of thought. I'll have to make a note and we'll come back. It's something we should remember. Representative, or Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, being that I'm a rookie here, what I'd like to know is if you can give us a little bit of a few tips on what is important to look for here, because I see minor differences in money. Is that important?
Senator Carlson, basically that's what this will be, basically money. The riders, as we speak of a rider, is strictly language, and sometimes there's money in it, and I think they will come in it. But if we're relatively... how would we explain that, Senator Murphy? If they're relatively close and it's just a little difference in the money, I think they've shown it just different amounts. But if there's further language in it, then they will comment on it. The other thing is they don't edit, but they will just say what's going on with it.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, yeah. Senator? Yeah, please.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, and I'll just go through that first document and point out the differences. And if you want more detail or want me to pause on any of these provisions, let me know. Down the left side, the left column gives the reviser page, which refers to your side-by-side, the full text side-by-side, which is the next long document in your book. So I think the first, well, as you've already mentioned, a lot of the appropriation numbers are different, and those flow from other differences in the bills, and we'll touch on those differences as opposed to all of the number differences as we go. On page R4, the Senate has rider language to the airport's appropriation, and that appropriates a one-time $200,000 appropriation for administrative expenses of an airport funding advisory task force. Then on R6, page R6, the House has rider language directed to the Infrastructure Operations and Maintenance MnDOT appropriation to direct the department to reopen the Culkin Safety Rest Area on I-35.
Okay.
The Senate does not have comparable language, although it does exist in another bill. And on page R7, on the state road construction appropriation, the House has a $77 million one-time shift from the fiscal year 08 back into 07. The Senate does not have that. The Senate has some rider language to the state road construction appropriation that the House does not have. There is a $2 million appropriation for installation of concrete and cable median barriers on trunk highways where there have been crossover crash fatalities. There's a $70,000 appropriation for an intersection on trunk highway 60. And there's also, there's also, I guess it isn't specified in here, for concrete barriers as well. And then there's the commissioner is prohibited from constructing a J-turn on Trunk Highway 169 in Belle Plain. Then moving forward on R11, the House appropriates $600,000 in fiscal year 08 for the town road sign replacement program. The Senate does not have any appropriation in this bill for that program, but the Senate does have a $2.5 million appropriation in a different bill for this same program. On page R12, under the transfer section, the Commissioner of Finance in the House is directed to transfer $4.6 million from the Trunk Highway Revolving Loan account back to the Trunk Highway Fund. And I believe this was a governor's initiative, if I'm not mistaken, and the Senate does not authorize that transfer. The House also directs the Commissioner of Finance to transfer $1.2 million from the general fund to the Trunk Highway Fund as reimbursement for Trunk Highway Moundsview land transfer, also a governor's initiative and also does not exist in the Senate bill. On R14 also, in the Metropolitan Council Metro Transit appropriation, the Senate does not require Hennepin County to pay for a 50% share or for any share of the Hiawatha Light Rail operating costs. And the House does continue the existing requirement that Hennepin County pay a 50% share of the Hiawatha LRT operating costs. Is that R17? Somewhere. Okay, on R17, the House includes a $1.4 million appropriation in each year for information system security and disaster recovery, and this is in the Department of Public Safety appropriations. This was also, I believe, a governor's initiative, does not exist in the Senate bill. Okay. Then there's a lot of similar language then in the appropriations that follow, similar or identical. If you go all the way up to page R22, there is a difference in the LAC language. The House, I believe, has the traditional rider language that we usually include in the transportation bills that has to do with transferring unappropriated trunk highway fund balances to MnDOT during the interim when the legislature, basically it's used during the interim when the legislature's not in session. And the Senate bill changes those requirements. It requires that the LAC or a majority of a group that is the LAC plus the ranking minority members of the transportation committees on both sides has to actually approve the transfer. on the House side, they just have to review the proposed transfer. And that's the usual language that we've had before. The Senate changes it to require actual written approval, and it involves the ranking minority members as well as the LAC members. Okay.
Excuse me, Representative Workman, you had a question?
I'm sorry, what does LAC refer to?
Legislative Advisory Commission, and that's statutory, and it's the, I'd have to look at the exact language in the statute, but it's the, I believe the Commissioner of Finance, it's the Finance Committee Chairs, it's the Majority Leader and the Speaker, and then the chairs of the committees or the divisions that have jurisdiction over that particular expenditure. Okay. On page R23, the House has a provision that requires the Commissioner of Transportation to identify and consider the sale of state-owned land under DOT control, and the proceeds would be deposited in the Trunk Highway Fund. On R24, there's a compensation adjustment in both bills, but the amount is different. In the House, they're spread throughout the different appropriations. And I think the percentage is like 2-something percent. And on the Senate side, the Senate just has language on R23 that gives an overall direction to bring about this compensation increase. And it's at least 3.25% in 08 and 09, compounded in 09. Okay. And on the Senate side, on R24, there's language that does not exist on the House side directing the Commissioner of Transportation to make sure that any work on the Lafayette Bridge is compatible with future implementation of transit on the bridge. R24, Section 10 on the Senate side directs the Commissioner of Transportation to issue permits to the City of Rochester to complete the construction of an interchange. Somewhat of a difference. Yeah, I'll skip that one for now. Okay, on R24, Section 12 establishes on the Senate side the County Road 3 Overpass Task Force to take a look at an issue in Scott County that involves a County Road 3 overpass over Trunk Highway 169 and sets up a task force. R25, Section 13 on the Senate side establishes the airport funding task force that was funded with $200,000 with an earlier rider that I mentioned. Then Article 2 on the House side and Article 9 on the Senate side, compared by the revisor beginning on R28, is the Trunk Highway Bonding Article. There are some significant differences here. The Senate is about twice where the House is. Each one is a 10-year program. The House has $100 million each year for 10 years. The Senate has $200 million each year for 10 years. The Senate calls out a few projects for funding in the first year for the Great River Road Historic Properties, for MnDOT Mankato Headquarters, for the Transportation Building Exterior, and for Economic Development Interchanges. And the House has at least $50 million for transit facilities on trunk highways. And then we have the corresponding differences in the bond sale expenses and the total appropriation. Then we get to, okay, what is characterized in the House bill as Article 3, Highway User Taxes, beginning on page R31. The Transit Assistance Fund is established in both. The big difference with this, well, one of the big differences in this area is that the Senate spends the motor vehicle lease sales tax and the House does not. And we'll get to the specifics on that pretty soon, but the first reference is here on R31 to that difference. Vehicle registration tax is identical. On R33 and 34, The House limits a four-month vehicle registration option to vehicles that are leased or rented for up to 28 days, and the Senate does not have that provision. The fuel tax on R34, which is a separate article in the Senate bill, the House has a 5 cent gas tax increase in 07 and another 5 cents in 08. The Senate increases 10 cents right away in 07. And also the Senate indexes the fuel taxes and the House does not. Article 6 on the Senate side, there are several sections there beginning on R35 that have no comparable provision in the House. On the Senate side, Section 2 increases the fees on rentals and short-term leases of vehicles from 3 to 5% of the sale price. And then it includes, for the first time, the document administration fee in the total amount that would be paid for both lease sales tax purposes and MVEST purposes. Then, as to the motor vehicle lease sales tax, there is a phase-in over the next 5 years on the Senate side, not on the House side, so that all of the revenues by 2012 are allocated 50% to highways and 50% to transit. And of that 50% to transit, 75% goes to the metro area and 25% to greater Minnesota. No comparable provision in the House. Then on R39 to 41, there is a reallocation of the MVEST revenues and the phase-in pursuant to the constitutional amendment. And the difference there is, the main difference is that both allocate 40-60 between transit and highways. But of the 40, the Senate split is 36-4 between Metro and Greater Minnesota, and the House split is 36.5-3.5 between Metro and Greater Minnesota. The FASAC fund is very similar. That begins on R43, but there, I think the major difference, as I read them, is has to do with the deductions that are taken off the top of the FASAC fund for administrative costs, disaster accounts, research accounts, state park road account, and those in the Senate are taken off of the entire fund, including the new money that's raised by the tax increases, and the House takes those deductions only from the old money under the existing formula, because the CASA, in both bills, the new CASA formula that reallocates the money applies only to the increased revenues, not to the entire fund. Then R48, the beginning of the House's local option taxes, and it's called county wheelage tax on the Senate side. There is a difference in R48. On the House side, the House requires MnDOT to spend between 48 and 52% of all trunk highway fund expenditures in the metropolitan transportation area. And that term metropolitan transportation area relates to the metro sales tax. So in the House, that metropolitan transportation area is 5 counties out of the 7-county metro area, with the possible addition of Scott and Carver counties at their option. The Senate comparable provision says that when the metropolitan area sales tax is imposed, the percentage of total trunk highway fund expenditures in the metro, which is 7 counties in the Senate bill, can't drop less than 2 percentage points below average spending in the metro. So it can't significantly be reduced when the local sales tax is enforced and being collected. The wheelage tax is similar. Okay, then the local sales tax, which starts on R50, the metro sales tax and local sales tax. There are some significant differences there. First of all, as I mentioned, the House includes 5 counties. They took out Carver and Scott, but they may join based on resolutions of their county boards. The Senate has 7 counties. The Senate bill imposes the 1/2 cent sales tax by operation of law. The House version authorizes the county boards acting under a joint powers agreement to impose the sales tax. Then, let's see, the House has a provision that says that the tax is not included in determining Minneapolis's top allowed sales tax. Senate doesn't have that provision. Excuse me. The House lists, let's see, we don't have that. Well, it's between 52 and 55 in the revised document. List several items that have to be covered in their joint powers agreement. Excuse me. And the Senate the only provision that is required in the joint powers agreement is an option for contiguous counties to join. The Senate Joint Powers Board also includes city representatives, one city representative from each county, and the House Joint Powers Board has just one representative of each county. As to expenditure of the local sales tax revenues, the House requires consultation with the cities, and the Senate, as I said, already includes city representatives on the board. There's a major difference in the allocation of the revenues. The Senate has specified percentages. 75% has to go for transit, planning, capital, and operation. And it also includes required studies of 8 specified corridors. Then 20% of sales tax revenues for trunk highways and local roads, and 5% for bicycle paths and pedestrian walkways and transit-oriented development. The House does not have specified percentages, but just permissible uses, and that would be for trunk highways, local roads of regional significance, capital improvements to transitways, and planning, engineering, and construction of transitways, and transit operations. The House also includes a required transfer in fiscal year 2009 of $18.8 million to the Met Council for transit operations. The House requires the Joint Powers Board to report annually to the legislature, and the Senate does not require that. The Senate bill has a weighted voting system in its bill that the Joint Powers Board would utilize in making decisions. Each county has a 5% vote, and that is split between the county and city representative of that county. And then the remaining votes are apportioned out according to the source of the sales tax revenue collections. The House authorizes the joint powers to come up with an agreement on weighted voting in its joint powers agreement, but it does not specify what that agreement or what that arrangement has to be. The Senate also has a provision that allows cities to impose a 1/2 cent sales tax, which would be based on a majority vote in the county, and this is in the metro as well. The proceeds would have to be dedicated to transportation, but a city can't impose the tax if the county has already imposed the tax, and the entire county would have to vote to approve that city tax. Okay, then the county outstate taxes are similar. The effective date is slightly different for the local sales tax. In the House, it's January 1, 2008. In the Senate, it's September 30, 2007. Then on R57, there are quite a few statutory changes. The Senate on R57 increases from $50 to $75 the document administration fee that's charged by motor vehicle dealer to process documents on a motor vehicle sale. The House on R57 allows the commissioner to transfer money from the Trunk Highway Revolving Loan account to the Trunk Highway Fund, and that goes along with language in the appropriations section that effectuates such a transfer. So this is a statutory authority for that. That's the governor's rec and not in the Senate bill. R57 to 59, the Senate redistributes the 5% of the highway user fund that is that constitutionally can be distributed by the legislature no more frequently than every 6 years. And the new formula leaves town roads and town bridges as they are. It specifies percentages for turnbacks, and now those are part of the flexible fund. And it leaves just 14.5% in the flexible fund for the Commissioner of Transportation to divide between highway safety improvements and routes of regional significance. This redistribution of the 5% takes effect in 2009. The Senate on R59 takes the remaining money in the World War II Memorial Donation Account and appropriates that to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, and that is from the Veterans License Plate. Section 4 on the Senate side, a person whose license has been revoked for DWI can pay license reinstatement in two installments instead of having to pay it all up front. And they can get a short-term driver's license after they've paid the first installment to get them back driving again. R61, Section 5 changes existing statute that requires the commissioner to review budget forecast information with legislative chairs and staff. And instead of 1 week, instead of 2 weeks before the forecast, the review would occur 1 week after the forecast, which is pretty much the way we've been doing it. Section 6 on R62 has to do with the Highway Construction Training and Skill Improvement Program. And there are federal funds available for that. And this provision would require the commissioner to use all or as much as close to all as possible of the federal funds that are available to support that program and to report compliance every other year to the legislature. And in Section 7 on R62, the commissioner would have to include a sanction in all federally funded contracts for contractors who fail to meet project disadvantage business enterprise goals. Section 8 on R63 is a transit initiative that would make certain transit activities available for public transit participation funding, and that would include regional transit call centers and partnerships to coordinate transit services. Section 9 sets a requirement that would take effect in 2010. It says that paratransit providers who receive state funding would have to allow passengers to schedule trips up to 4 days in advance. Section 10 has the commissioner facilitate partnerships among paratransit providers, and 11 requires paratransit providers to enter into intercounty agreements, again, effective 2010. The commissioner is required to support operation of one-stop regional call centers in Section 12. Section 13 on R64 requires the commissioner to report annually on the status of major highway projects. R65 limits the county's ability to contribute to a transit project capital cost of 10% and prohibits an authority from contributing to transit operations. And this ties in with the Senate taking Hennepin County off of the Hiawatha light rail operating cost payment. Section 15 is also a transit provision that says the commissioner or local government no longer has to get Metropolitan Council approval for acquiring land for a transit fixed guideway. Section 16 is similar to the provision I just mentioned earlier, but this has to do with the metro area, requiring special transit service providers to allow early scheduling up to 4 days in advance, and that is effective in 2010. Identical. Then skipping down to R68, the Senate authorizes Met Council bonding of up to $44 million for capital bonding. And in Section 18, the Senate alone requires the Met Council to study heavily traveled corridors and designate the locally preferred transit mode for each corridor. Section 19 is conforming language, which takes the Commission of Transportation out of light rail transit final design plans. The Section 20 on the Senate side directs the governor to designate either the Met Council or the state as being responsible for each light rail transit facility in the metro. Section 21 authorizes that designated responsible authority to apply for federal assistance for light rail. R-74, Section 22, authorizes the Met Council to plan, design, construct, and equip light rail in the metro. So it makes the council the lead agency for light rail. And Section 23 requires operation of light rail by the Met Council. Section 24 on the Senate side, on R-74, has to do with the Metro Transit Police, and it extends their jurisdiction to certain other areas besides the highways, and also to it extends it to commuter rail if the council is operating it. Section 25 on R-75 on the Senate side expands the transit taxing district to encompass the seven-county metro area. Section 27 includes the Metro Transit Police within the list of agencies allowed to seize property that's subject to criminal forfeiture. Section 28 on R-77 requires the commissioner to build a commuter rail station in Fridley on the North Star Line. Section 29 is a study requirement for the commissioner in Greater Minnesota and the Met Council to study the needs for special transportation services for people with disabilities and to establish a 5-year phased plan. And that would have to include 14-hour per day service. Section 30 is technical. Okay. The driver and beginning on R-79, the fees are identical, with just maybe a technical difference here and there. Then, approaching the end here on R-89, the House prohibits tolls on bridges and highways unless they were being collected on January 1, 2008, and that is not in the Senate bill. The Senate bill has a provision, not in the House bill, that would direct the Commissioner of Public Safety to propose a system for the use of credit cards for vehicle registration and title transactions and license and ID card fees.
That's it. Thank you. I notice as we go through, there's the Senate has policy language where the House has a separate policy bill, and that's the reason for a lot of this. And there's also some, I think, some bills that are moving on their own, too, I see on both sides. So we'll meet those bills up and have to take care of that either way, either a separate bill or it comes together. The one other, I happen to think what I was thinking before, for the members of the committee, this committee does not take testimony from outside of the committee. We can ask questions of people, but they don't provide testimony. So anytime you have a question, we can ask, like, the department or someone, but we don't have anybody in here testifying on a particular portion of the bill. I mean, you should recognize that. Otherwise, we'd never finish. And that's been the procedure in the past all the time, too, Senator Murphy. So you're aware of that right away. If we don't call people up, or mean it, not call people up, but when we call them up, it's basically to ask them a question, and that's all they should be asking or responding to, not giving us a reason to support or not support their bills. Unless there are some questions, Bonnie, I'm sure if I can maybe call you Bonnie, I sure appreciate this. It gives you a good idea what we're going to be running into, and then we also have the spreadsheets, basically, to compare the dollars. So that's something we'll be working on to compare both with both of these. Senator Murphy, is there something else we should address?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to mention something for tomorrow's meeting now. We'll go through it section by section, maybe take some of those issues off the table that are identical especially, you know, when it comes to the DVS stuff, a lot of that, those provisions were all identical, and I think everybody pretty much agrees that that's going to move towards a fee-based system, and we can maybe agree on that. And it was interesting that you mentioned testimony. Tomorrow, if, you know, and this is just for the public, if there's anybody that's got skin in this game, they better be in the room. And that includes the people at the top of those organizations, because there will be pointed questions asked of commissioners and the like to make sure that we're on the right track here.
Is that the assumption?
Oh, no, that's...
that we're going to be tomorrow.
Yes, if we decide to meet tomorrow, we better make sure that all the commissioners and department heads that have something in this bill are here.
And normally the meeting time will get it out, I believe, on both the staff, House and Senate will be getting notices out on your email as much as practical that we can get out ahead of time. Two, for the members that are Senate members, in case you're discussing something with your next door or next neighbor, if you don't want it to, these are pretty sensitive mics. Press your mute button. If you see it up there by your thing, you can cut off so it doesn't go out through. We do not take minutes, but we take a recording. It's not required that we have to have a minute, but we do take recordings and they keep the tape so we'll know what's going on. So in the event that you'd be discussing something, you may not want to get on the tape. You think, I'm just going to ask Senator Murphy a question. It appears that is the Senate needed in what kind of order, you know?
It's in the morning.
11. Supposedly the House is supposedly finishing usually after between 1 and 2, isn't that correct?
My understanding is we'll be done by 1 every day,
so we
other
could
than Thursday.
Schedule, kind of like unless the members want to do it, we necessarily don't have to go in the evenings yet.
Well,
okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I can make a suggestion.
Senator Murphy.
I hate evening
meetings. Me too. Senator Murphy's a newlywed, just like Senator Seaman, you know. These evenings are probably not the best. We'll probably get some of them anyhow, but if we can, to the extent we can, we'll meet in the afternoon.
Yeah. And, Mr. Chairman, just two things. I think that we should just try to set 3 o'clock as our starting time and try to hang on that as best as possible. And the other thing is if we do go a little bit later and there is some food provided, it's always been the tradition that wherever the conference committee's held, that chamber would buy.
We will never be meeting at lunch or dinner time. Otherwise, we'll take care of it. Unless there are any questions from the committee, Senator Murphy has the gavel tomorrow, and as they indicate, he may have it for all day, but he wouldn't have it for the next day. So, you have to bring your own gavel.
Oh, I got to bring my own gavel. All right.
And you also have—I don't know if you want to take these books with you, be certainly bring them back. Unless there are any further questions.
We have some shape. We can
there. You want to leave them with us?
Yeah. If we could leave them with us.
Perhaps better if you leave all your books with us and bring it back to us. And if there aren't any further questions, thank you, and the meeting is adjourned.